WTTS on demand.
Hey, this is Scott Riggs backstage at Bonnaroo 2012, hanging out with the Avett brothers. How you doing?
Very good.
Doing good. How
very
you doing?
Good. Very good. Thank you very much. I always like to start by asking bands about kind of the music scenes and where they came from and how that influenced them a little bit. I just think it's a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times it's important to either helping support it or driving them to discover other things. So can you talk about what life is like for a musician in Concord?
Yeah, there would be kind of a lack of a scene, and that would explain some of our early travels, our initial travels. Nothing against the art or music around that area, but there's not so much a quote unquote scene. There's not enough activity to really support really the visual arts or music. Arts all around, there is an interest, but it's not really a destination for folks. So for us, that translated into, you know, a healthy understanding that in order to do it, we would really need to work our way out, to start making some road trips and working our way out. But so that was a big part of our identity in the beginning, was that we were coming not from a music scene, but from more of a labor intensive kind of blue collar scene, where all of our contemporaries and our peers and our friends were not involved in writing songs and playing them on stage, but you know, laying brick and framing houses and roofing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So without the scene, then what was it that drew you guys to do what you do?
Well, a scene can be inspiring, but I don't know that a scene alone is enough to make you do what you do.
And a scene has its own identity as well. And so if you're in a scene, you may have to belong to that identity, and you can't really, I mean, it's probably more difficult to break out of that than it is for guys in Concord, because the identity is do it yourself. It's not really a sound, a look, or anything. It's like Seth said, a labor intensive approach, which was do it yourself. If there is a look or a sound, it's something that's organic, rootsy, country maybe, but the identity was do it yourself, and the scene, I think we made our own scene and found ourselves bucking our own scene, and as well as taking part in our own scene, and also to reinforce what Seth said, it also forced us to get out and discover other scenes and interact with other scenes, like the anti-folk scene in New York, which was one that we immediately identified with for some odd reason. We made friends with several of those folks for whatever reason. It was a very fruitful relationship as far as a songwriting and inspiration between us and our friends from the anti-folk scene.
Cool. I've read that you guys are working on and maybe close to done with a new record. Working with Rick Rubin again.
Yeah.
I'm sure this would be a different experience the second time around, because now you have a kind of established relationship and it
Absolutely.
Might be more engaged now.
Absolutely.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the record is done. And just recently finished. We're speaking here in June of 2012. We pretty much just put the finishing touches on it over the last couple of months. And, the first experience was produced the record I Ain't Loving You, and that was in a lot of ways kind of not a changing of the guard. Every record for us has been like a noticeable change, a noticeable, you know, example of growth and change, and Rick's involvement and the involvement of his engineer that he works with quite a bit, a guy named Ryan Hewitt. Both of those were pretty major elements in the development of that record. But for us, it was the first time working with, you know, this internationally renowned producer, someone who, on a personal level, we immediately got along with very well, found a lot of similarities in musical taste, and just, you know, in conversation, we found very quickly, you know, a nice rapport right off. So we knew we got along with this person. We knew we respected his work, enjoyed a lot of his work throughout our whole lives. So, yeah, we were doing some processing. While we were making that record, we were doing some processing on a lot of levels. So this next record very much feels like we sort of had our sea legs. And we're only concerned with the task at hand, which was making the best record we could. That's what we were doing with I Am Loving You as well, but there, you know, we can't deny there was a transition sort of factor.
Yeah, and I'd imagine on the first record, or maybe the first time you worked with him, that if he made suggestions, you felt maybe a little bit more versus, you're like, God, it's Rick Rubin. He's making the suggestion.
Right.
I don't, like, we should really seriously consider it, but maybe this time around, you, if you were like, maybe we tweak it the second time around, you're a little more comfortable with that situation and it's more collaborative.
Yeah, yeah, well, we weren't hesitant to try things then, and we're trying not to be hesitant to try things now. For the most part, it was just a question of getting into the mindset that we knew was right. Like Rick's mindset is not, it should be like this. His mindset is, hey, I've got an idea. Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be terrible. And he'll be very vocal about that and say, this might just be awful, but let's find out, you know. If I've got an idea, he's like, well, let's try it. Find out if it's terrible or good. Same thing with Scott, you know, same thing with Bob. If someone's got an idea, let's find out. And that was an adjustment for us, because for us it's always been like, hey, we've got 9 days to make the record. Let's make the record, you know. Let's get the cover right. Let's get this thing mastered and let's put it out. That's always been it. So the idea of like, well, let's take time to find out if you know, if banjo is good for the song or not, or if a drum loop is good for the song, or if organ's good for the song, instead of just being like, no, that won't work without even hearing it, you know, which is really like an amateur mistake on our part to think that we would know what something would sound like without trying it. So we're a little bit more in that realm of where we can be like, yeah, let's try it out and find out, you know. But yeah, even in the beginning, I don't think that we weren't intimidated to say, nah, that's not working for us. You know, we did have close to 10 years under our belt before we started working with Rick. So he became a part of our story and ours a part of his at a very appropriate time.
You guys have about, I think, 6 studio albums, a few live albums in there. You've been touring, growing your audience. As you approach this new album, I'm sure you learn something new every time. Was there some things that you had learned, especially with all the touring that you guys are doing, that you applied to this album that kind of changed things up? Or
countless things. I mean, as far as our approach to singing and what we're okay with, the attitude of that's good enough, you know. that kind of had to change without us even talking about it. Most changes do happen without us talking about it, but yeah, I mean, with on average about 300 shows in between records, 300 or 400 shows between records, you just are not going to be the same person when you step back into that booth or into that studio. It's just not going to be more than we could mention, any more than, you know, any of us here in this room were the same person we were, you know, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. It changes without you pushing for it to.
Can you talk about the legendary give back that you guys were doing?
Yeah, the partnership with Cheerwine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's not much to tell. Some of it's still all secretive, but we. No. That's not. We you know. We were contacted by them. We've been drinking Cheerwine our whole lives. it's a big hit from where and where we're from, and they just have a desire to do something good for the sake of good, and that's a very attractive idea for us. And so I don't know. I mean, all of our dealings with them have been nothing but good. Just dealt with a lot of good people over there. Scott actually did a radio spot for Cheerwine at some point last year. And we've kind of been toying with the idea of trying to work together more. But, yeah, really good folks over there, and they're just trying to do something good, and that sounds good to us. So,
and it's all secret, but people can follow your Twitter and find out more.
It's no secret anymore. I think locations are what.
Yeah, that's what. I'm not talking about the actual. I'm talking about some of the specifics of the event that are so secretive that I don't know the secret.
I think they're usually secrets to us
until we step on stage.
You probably know way more about it. You know, we kind of. When somebody says, we want to do something that's going to help somebody, or we want to do something that's going to be good, and they say, does it fit in your schedule for you, and we can physically make it, then we just try to do it. And this was something that we had already, like Seth said, we'd already had some interaction with Cheerwine, and we've been very careful about product placement type thing, and we're not, we still couldn't be spokespeople for any product, but we saw a company trying to do something good and charitable in a good way that we felt comfortable with jumping on board and being a part of that. So it seems like a win-win, really.
Yeah. So you guys play a lot of festivals. I think Bonnaroo is its own beast, but if you guys were going to give a tip to bands that had never done it before, what would be your Bonnaroo tip?
Oh, here's the tip. It's the same thing we tell each other every night. Go out there. You play this show.
Give it everything you
got. Give it everything you got. When you're done with that show, you shouldn't even be standing.
You left it all on the stage?
Everything. Like, there is no tomorrow. But remember, you got to play another show tomorrow. You got
to play it. So hold a little bit
and
back.
And keep a little back. Okay.
You give it everything you got, but save it just a little bit because, you know.
And in all seriousness, you got to wake up tomorrow. In a lot of ways, you have to be able to throw it away. It's always a good, it's easy to be intimidated by New York City. As far as cities, you're going to Paris, you're playing Paris, and oh God, this is your one chance. There's always tomorrow. There really is. And a lot of times when you throw it away, it ends up being better than if you put all the stock in the world into it. Yeah. Because Bonnaroo wants you to throw it away. You know, they want you to get out there relaxed. They want you to get out there and throw it away for the crowd and see that in interaction. And every night we have to do that because it is – You definitely don't know when it's the last night. You always can think, oh my God, this we're not guaranteed tomorrow at all. Realistically speaking, between the time we play and the next time we play, there's a lot of things that happen. And so we try to give it everything we got, but we also have to just say, hey, it's another night. Be relaxed and go out there, and whatever happens, happens. It's good.
Yeah, it's best to take on the attitude of the audience at Bonnaroo. They're there to have fun. They're not nervous. They're not there to have anxiety about anything. They're here to enjoy it. So the bands ought to be too. And that mirrored attitude is very healthy for a festival like Bonnaroo.
The whole thing encompasses a lot of things, like taking yourself too seriously and embarrassment and all that stuff. All this goes along with that. Just all goes out the door.
Yeah, I mean, our set's going to be a total disaster.
No doubt about it.
Get used to that idea.
The
sound's going to be wretched.
I
mean, I'll be lucky if I go out on stage and don't trip right off and just fall flat on my face.
I mean, between Radiohead and Sharon Jones, we're going to sound terrible.
Yeah, I know it. They got us playing after Sharon Jones and before Radiohead, before Rodrigo and Gabriela. So, yeah, we got some issues with that.
Over before we even step in.
That's right.
The Avett Brothers backstage at Bonnaroo 2012. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. WTTS On Demand.